Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle. And you know us, we are your HR analytics dashboard. That's right. Tired of pulling all those messy and crappy spreadsheets from all your different HR systems to try to tell a compelling data-driven story of your workforce? Well, no more spreadsheets, because you can actually get our dashboard, connect to all of your different systems, HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, Glassdoor, etc., and pull all that data into one real-time, streamlined HR dashboard so that you can view, track, share, and analyze all your people metrics in one real-time, user-friendly place. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome Jackie Linton to the podcast. She's the president of JLHR Solutions, and she's also the president of the Philadelphia chapter of SHRM. Jackie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Bruce.
So today our topic is about how to expand the available workforce population. But before we go into that, Jackie, it would be great if you could let us all know, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Right. So I didn't start out in HR. My undergraduate degree is actually in industrial engineering. So I started my career as an industrial engineer. And it didn't take me a long time to figure out that that was probably not the right career for me. While it did, you know, provide a lot of variability in what I did, it really didn't play to my strengths and my love to be around people. So I had the opportunity to transition into an operations role where I felt like at the time it was one of the best jobs I ever had. You got daily feedback on how you were doing, and you really got a chance to work very closely with people to get things done. So from there, I transitioned into an OD role, which really I felt like I was hitting my stride. And I decided that HR was probably a good place for me to go next. What I didn't realize is that my role in OD was only a fraction of what a real no kidding HR person does. And in my first real HR job, I learned that the hard way. There were a number of challenges in that role, and I probably had more experiences in the 3 years I was there than most HR people have in 10 years. But it really did set me up for the rest of my career in HR, and really helped me to understand the value that HR can bring and the many areas that HR can play. So I could go on and on about that, but I know that's not what we want to talk about today.
Awesome. Thanks for that. And for anyone that's ever listened to this podcast, they know I always try to be in the mindset of the listener. And so when they hear something and they may not know what it is, I always try to ask the guest to explain. So you said the term OD a couple of times. So could you just explain what that is?
Right. So for me, the role that I was in was we were developing a new work system design in a manufacturing company. And we were transitioning from having traditional supervisors to having self-directed work teams. And so the idea was that we needed to recreate how the work got done, you know, how people interacted with each other, the systems and processes that supported their work, how these new processes would play out for our manufacturing staff. So we had someone come in who was an organizational development guru to help us to put that together. So that's when I talk about the entree into HR through OD, it's through that process.
And when you say OD, you're referring to organizational development,
that's
correct?
Right. Yes.
Got it. And then also, could you just give us a quick glimpse into the work that you're doing with JLHR?
Sure. So fast forward, you know, I told you a little bit about the beginning of my career. My career over, you know, the last X number of years has expanded. I've had a number of very senior HR roles, including the head of HR for a small company. And I was also working with the city of Philadelphia as a internal HR consultant, which really kind of brought me to the place where I am now. I discovered that the thing I enjoyed most was helping departments solve problems. And so I decided about a year and a half ago to do that on my own. So JL HR Solutions is a small boutique consulting company that is project-based, and we work on strategic HR initiatives for companies, agencies, governmental agencies, etc.
Thanks. So today our topic is how to expand the available workforce population. And so I think a good place to start is, what does the current available workforce population look like today?
If you think about Philadelphia, we are in a very unique place. You know, in nationwide, the unemployment rate is at an all-time low. And companies in Philadelphia are struggling to find employees to fill available openings. But on the other side of this, Philadelphia is also plagued with a very high degree of returning citizens, people who have been shut out of the workforce and have not been able to participate. So right now, there's this huge gap being created because there's more jobs than the traditional folks can fill. And then there's this population, not only returning citizens, but people with disabilities, people who have gone into the senior part of their workforce, of their careers. These folks have also are also been shut out of the access to these jobs over the last several years. Now we need to expand the number of people who are available to take these jobs just because of the current environment.
So when I think about the different categories of the population that's being overlooked and not being included in the current workforce, despite the low numbers of employment or unemployment rather, I think about categories, some of them you included, some I want to add on, including those with disabilities, veterans, returning citizens from incarceration, parents, primarily mothers who may have had a large gap in their workforce from taking care of their children. Can we paint a brush, a broad brush, against all of these different categories, or do they all have particular challenges in regards to why we as a whole are not including these individuals in the current workforce population?
So I believe that one of the biggest challenges that they all face is the outlook from companies about what good looks like. Traditionally, you know, people, organizations could be very selective in terms of the kind of people that they wanted to fill a job. This person had to have this certain kind of pedigree or a certain degree or a certain set of experiences. And what companies are finding now is that if they restrict their sourcing processes to the traditional ways of thinking about talent, they're going to come up short. This is definitely a buyer's market in terms of the employees' ability to move around, those traditional employees. And so unless a company can differentiate itself from other companies as being a place where people would want to come, again, I feel like they will be coming up short. So while each one of these population groups have individual challenges, I think in general terms, this idea of only traditional ways of looking at available talent is one of the biggest challenges that they all face.
So this may be a silly question, but I'm assuming based off of all of these different population groups we're discussing that most individuals from these groups are applying, but then they're getting denied, not that they're just not applying, correct?
Well, I think it's in that case, it might be a bit of a mixed bag. So, for example, I think that sometimes returning citizens may not be applying simply because they feel like they're not qualified and they won't be given a chance. There are lots of organizations in Philadelphia that support this population group, but connecting them with employers who are willing to hire them or even consider them for jobs is a huge challenge. On the other side, you know, parents who've been out of the workforce for a while, for instance, might see themselves only in jobs that they participated in before they went out. But the world is changing at lightning speeds, and so is the environment of work. So if they were able to consider new opportunities that didn't exist before they went out, and companies were more willing to consider the experiences that they bring that are not traditional, then that would be a much easier lift. So they may not be applying to as many jobs as they should be because of that. And then, you know, considering people with disabilities, while most organizations will say that they consider people with disabilities, oftentimes job descriptions don't speak to the requirements of the job that might be challenging for people with certain disabilities. So I do think there's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of whether or not people are applying for as many jobs as they should be based on their individual circumstance.
Because this is such an important topic, and I apologize if we don't include all of the groups that are not being included, but for these four that we've spoken about, let's do a deeper dive into them individually so that HR leaders listening can truly understand why they may have bias or unconscious bias towards this specific group. How can they change the hiring practices to better include this group? And what does it look like to make sure that they're attracting individuals from these different population groups? So let's start with individuals with disabilities.
So, as I said earlier, sometimes job descriptions don't always include the specific physical challenges of the job. Now, again, you know, here, let me just step back a minute. In my experience, job descriptions aren't generally the kind of thing that HR people put top of their list to review often. Usually, you know, once a job description has been created, unless something substantial changes in the organization, our organizations may not relook at them and think about how they would fit into this current environment. So with that being said, many of the job descriptions are outdated. And so when they are posted online or when they go out to look for new talent, people with disabilities who are considering them may not see how they would fit into that particular job. So my recommendation is that, you know, whenever a job goes out for to be filled, organizations should really look at what they're asking for in the current environment. As I said, things are changing so rapidly. Technology is becoming such a huge part of what we do. There are lots of disabilities that can be overcome with the support of technology. And when organizations consider these things, they would automatically open up the job to a wider set of talent.
And when it comes to making sure that you're attracting candidates with disabilities, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, again, when you think about, let me just step back to about 10 years ago, 2008, when we had the huge recession and lots of people were getting laid off and companies had lots of people to choose from in order to fill their open positions. So they didn't have to compete with each other to be the best in breed in terms of the employee experience. Well, that has definitely shifted. And now employers need to think about themselves as an employer of choice. And what does that really mean? So not only is it about the benefits that they offer, but about the work environment, about the opportunities that employees have to grow and develop. All of these things are important to people in today's environment, and organizations need to really be able to market themselves so that people will want to come to work there. Because given the choice, people are going to go to those organizations that they feel best benefit them. And again, when talent is scarce, you want to be the best in class.
All right, so now let's move over to the veteran population group. How does a listener make sure that they are identifying and removing any bias in the hiring process when looking to hire veterans and then also attracting them?
Right. So one of the things that needs to be considered is that in the military, many of the jobs are very similar to those that are in the workforce. However, they are not necessarily characterized in that way. The titles are different. They are mixed with other kinds of responsibilities that are not typical for non-veteran jobs. So it takes a little bit of effort to really be able to understand those experiences that veterans bring from their experience in the military. So with that being said, again, being open to what the job really requires and the kinds of experiences that would really support that job is really important. Just to give you an example, let's say that you had someone coming back from the military who's been a recruiter, and how they did their recruiting job is very different than how we recruit here. But the recruiting in the military is all about convincing people who never even thought about joining the military to join. And that takes a lot. That takes a lot of marketing know-how. That takes a lot of understanding of the jobs and availability within the military. And those skills are definitely transferable to any organization.
Awesome. I'm really loving this format. And so now let's continue down the line. And this group, which I know you're super passionate about, which is returning citizens, in regards to making sure that you're identifying bias, looking to remove it in the hiring process, and also doing a good job of attracting returning citizens, what could that look like in practice?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest challenges in this arena is really the stigma attached to returning citizens. You know, companies are afraid that, you know, this person was a violent offender and now they're going to come and do something violent in their workplace. Or they might be afraid that while the person may have been incarcerated for burglary or theft, that they're going to come in and steal, you know, from their organization. But I want to tell you a quick story that someone told me just last week. In their organization, they were looking for an architect, someone to help redesign their workspace. And they found this person who they decided to hire, and they came in and did a phenomenal job of redesigning their workspace. Everyone really loved it. It was very modern, very up to date. And to the point that their IT organization wanted to use this person as well. So the weekend before they were going to transition from their HR department to the IT department, this person didn't come to work. In fact, for a whole week, they didn't come to work. So they, you know, were really concerned that something had happened to this person. Well, as it turned out, the person was picked up over the weekend for DUI. And as a result of that, they didn't have their license, so they couldn't drive, and et cetera. And their HR department wanted to fire the person because they did not fit in with their structure around felony, not even a conviction, because it had just happened. But the leader of the IT group went to bat for this person, saying that really this person needs some help and they're a great employee and they delivered exactly what we wanted them to deliver. So I'd rather, you know, take the risk to help them to get help so that they can finish the job rather than going out and searching for someone again. So again, it is not one size fits all. And like I said, there are a number of organizations in Philadelphia that work with returning citizens to help prepare them to enter the workforce. So the risk of them actually coming in and doing something negative, from everything that I've heard, is relatively low. And they, you know, companies who have hired returning citizens say that they are some of the best employees they've ever had because they're just so grateful for a chance. They're just so grateful to be able to turn their lives around because without it, they are much more likely to go back into jail again.
When it comes to companies who are interested and want to hire more returning citizens, but they already have some type of background screening process that could potentially just filter this population group out before they even get a chance to interview, what kind of structural changes, and I guess this is where your organizational development background may come in regards to really changing the whole mindset and culture of the company to be able to do things like remove background screening or allow certain things in the background screening to pass through, which potentially could be a radical shift in what the company has been used to for 5, 10, 20 years.
Right. Well, recent legislation, which requires ban the box, doesn't allow employers to do that anymore. In fact, you cannot ask about a person's criminal background until you have made an offer. And so ideally, this is intended to help people get to the point where they are actually being considered for the job without, you know, screening them out in advance. The only issue with that is sometimes during the interview process, or even when they're reviewing resumes, they see a gap in a person's work history. They may draw conclusions about what that means and take the person out anyway. So they're not actually asking about their criminal background, but because of their resume or how they respond to questions, they may inadvertently get screened out. So here is where I think the HR folks and organizations can really have a huge impact on this work by really coaching their managers on how to review the resumes, actually even participating in the early process. Because in my experience, one of the biggest places that people get knocked out of the process is during the resume screen. And it can be things as simple as, you know, the name or where they live, which brings up, you know, stereotypes about who that person is, and they automatically get screened out. HR should be an integral part of that process to make sure that that doesn't happen.
There's so much there to discuss, but you also mentioned the gap in resume and work experience. So you actually gave me a great transition into the last population group we're going to discuss around caretakers who are primarily mothers who may take an extended period of time off. It could be 1 year, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be 18 years to take care of their child or children until they become adults and then want to return to the workforce, only to find out that they seem like they don't have enough experience or that they took too much time off. So maybe people think they're not qualified or lazy or whatever it is. And so the same way that we started to look deeper and try to game plan and provide best practices for the other groups, can we do the same thing for caretakers who have taken off an extended period of time to take care of their children or any loved one for that matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes what happens is people haven't like stopped working altogether, but they may be involved in volunteer work, or they may be working part-time, like maybe doing some retail or, you know, some job that would allow them to be there for their family, but still, you know, make a little money on the side. So I think if organizations can think about the kinds of skills that are required for the job and less about the kind of jobs people have held, then that automatically opens up the ideas for the kind of people who would be successful in that role. And what you'll find, I think, is that sometimes we don't pay enough attention to volunteer work. And, you know, in my volunteer experience, it takes a lot of skill to really be able to inspire people to do things when they're not getting paid. You know, you got to love your work enough where you do it for free. And that's what volunteers do. So if you are in a volunteer leadership role, I think that there's a lot to be said for your ability to drive results with very limited resources. So in my estimation, that's one of the areas that companies should really think more closely about, is how have these people interacted with groups that they have not been paid for? What is their focus? What is their commitment to doing this work? What are the results that they've been able to achieve? And that can have as much of an impact on the work that they've done as someone who's been in the workforce for the last 10 or 15 years.
And as we are about to move to the next section of the interview, are there any final words of wisdom that you would like to share with anyone listening in regards to how they could expand their candidate pool and really make the country better by hiring more individuals from any of these collective population groups or any one specific population group that you want to mention?
Yeah. So for the HR folks that are on this call, I believe that we as a profession can have a huge impact on organizations. And the way we do it is really by influencing the leaders who are making the decisions. And so rather than espousing a number of new and radical things that they should do, I think if HR people can actively participate in the process, asking questions not about what we've always done, but why is this needed? What is the benefit of this? What is the value of this? And really helping organizations see that the way we used to do it is not necessarily going to work for us today. So I see that as a critical role that HR people can play to help move the needle on this work effort.
Awesome. So now we're going to move to my favorite part of the interview, which is what I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. So the real question, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
So one of my favorite desserts is bread pudding.
Yes.
Yes. I love it with like a nice cream, a bourbon cream sauce, preferably. I like it warm. And I like it like, you know, I don't like it really dry. I like it to be like really moist.
Nice. The next time we meet, we're definitely going somewhere to have bread pudding for sure.
Well, I'm a connoisseur, so you'd better come correct.
Oh, I am up for the challenge. All right. And so we've been talking about a very serious topic. So now I want to ask you a fun, random question, which is, who's your favorite superhero and why?
Ooh, my favorite superhero. Does it have to be a superhero?
Yes. and if no one comes to mind there, then the question would be, if you could have one superhero power, what would it be?
Yeah. So if I could have one superhero power, I can do that one, right? It would be the ability to talk to people and automatically they would get like super fired up. So, yeah, right. So no matter what it is okay. I'm talking about, I would like, I'm having this conversation with you and I'd be able to say the right words that would get you like super fired up about what I'm saying and you'd run off and do exactly what I needed you to do.
I think for all the people that's ever answered that question on any interview, I think that's the first time that answer has probably been given.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, it's whatever you want to be your superpower. All right. And then the ridiculous question to bring it full circle. What do you think is one of the most ridiculous reasons as to why companies don't want to hire from these underserved population groups?
Okay. So I think the most ridiculous reason is because it's different and it's too hard to change.
Wow. That was very powerful and short and succinct.
Yeah. I think that sometimes people find it easier to just go along with the flow, the way we've always done things, than to take the risk to do something different. Because heaven forbid, what if it should fail? Or what if I don't do it quite right? Or, you know, what if I find myself out of my league? And I think all of those things will stop companies from changing and from doing things differently. But it also means that they miss a huge opportunity to do things better.
Well, Jackie, that was awesome. And I want to say thank you so much for being on the Employee Cycle Podcast.
Woo! Jackie! Well, thank you, Bruce, for having me. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It was much better than I thought it was going to be. It's my first podcast.
First podcast ever!
But thank you for having me. And hopefully I've said something that will touch or inspire somebody on this call to do something important. That's my superpower, remember?
There you go. I believe you did. And so if people want to follow you or get in touch with you, where can they find more information about you, JLHR, and the Philadelphia chapter of SHRM online?
Yeah, so feel free to check me out on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. Just reach out and, you know, get connected.
Awesome. So, as Jackie said, her superpower is to get people super fired up and excited about what she said. And I'm sure you are super fired up and ready to go back to your company and organization and really figure out how you can expand your workforce population. So if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Reviews, and wherever you can leave a review, because that shows that we're providing great content and that you like us, and who doesn't want to be liked? Also, if this was the first time that you've ever listened to the Employee Cycle podcast and you found us because you're already a super fan of Jackie, or you just thought that this topic was so compelling you had to hear about it and now you're hungry for more, well, please go and subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and whatever podcast player that you're currently using. And last but not least, all of you HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.